Mark 9:30-37. And hopefully it sounds familiar. From there they went out and began to go through Galilee. And he did not want anyone to know about it. For he was teaching his disciples and telling them, "The Son of Man is to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he has been killed, he will rise 3 days later." But they did not understand this statement, and they were afraid to ask him. They came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he began to question them, "What were you discussing on the way?" But they had kept silent, for on the way they had discussed with one another which of them was the greatest. And sitting down, he called to the 12 and said to them, "If anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." And taking a child, he set him before him, and taking him in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever receives one child like this in my name receives me, and whoever receives me does not receive me, but him who sent me." Bless this, the hearing and the reading of his word. I have to admit, I woke up this morning in a very, very, very funny mood in the fact that I woke up in a great mood. I can't explain it. I've been laughing all morning over things that may not be all that funny. Part of it is, until Saturday morning, I had no idea how to wrap this up, how I was going to end the sermon. And by Saturday at noontime, I had added another 10 pages of writing. Stand by, it may be a long morning. And I think one of the reasons was, with several things going on in our church, and part of the problem I was having with this sermon is the proper subject, because you can actually preach about 3 or 4 different things in these 7 verses. You can preach about what Jesus was telling them, that he's going to die, but we did that last week. We can talk about the reason they didn't discuss anything with Jesus, and we're going to kind of touch on that. We're going to talk about the little children and faith and believing and trust. And each one of these things were a sermon into themselves. But what really hit me, and it's germane to our church today at this time, is the subject of servanthood. Now, the trouble with servanthood is because you can do what is servanthood. It's going out and serving others, but how? And 9 times out of 10, when you hear the subject of servanthood, what you hear is, well, you need to go out and help people, and you got to go out and recruit people, and you got to feed them and everything else. But the biggest problem is, I am worried about the servanthood in our church, in Charity Baptist Church. And worried is the wrong number, because we'll discuss that towards the end of the service, so that's a bad choice of words on my part. But I know it's a worry of some of our congregation. But we're going to start with what brings it all up. This, for the second time in 2 chapters, Jesus is telling the disciples in no uncertain terms what's going to happen to them. And I like Mark, because Mark is straight to the point. If you're an idiot, he's going to label you as an idiot. And he does it again here. Jesus is specific. I'm going to go out. I'm going to be turned over to men. They're going to kill me. I'm going to rise again. That's not hard to understand. But they didn't say anything. What do they talk about later on? Who's the greatest? Now, the greatest in our culture today is interesting, because I hear the term GOAT, G-O-A-T, greatest of all time. And I hear it a lot about Tom Brady, and I'm a Tom Brady fan. But usually when we talk in society today about being the greatest, it's the guy that can play a child sport and make millions of dollars, even if you do it really well, some actor or actress because they can play a fake person convincingly. Well, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. Okay, you've led a limited life. And we have to ask that. What does it mean to really be great? Or does great actually have any meaning in our life? Is it something we really should strive to be? Don't get me wrong. I am in favor of people being the best at what they do and what they choose to do. Because you become the best in something by working at it. Those actors, yes, they work hopefully very, very hard at their craft. Those really, really, really special sports players work hard. They put in the hours. But then again, if you're good at something, so do you. If you're good at the job, it's because you've learned the job. You've made yourself out. You've put the hours in to be good at what you do. And with being good at what you do, it does bring you a measure of interest. People will know if you're good at what you do. And if you're good at what you do, they will come and ask you. They will come and talk to you. If you're in a business, they may come and try to hire you away. All well and good. You worked for it. That's a wonderful thing. But being good or even the best in your field, does it make you great? And I'll be perfectly honest. Tom Brady is really good at football. But I'll bet Lily can raise chickens better than he can. In fact, I'm positive of it. And I'll bet he doesn't play as well as Rachel. Or Janet. But they've worked at it. But I think what's going on now is it's a continuation of a theme, and we're finally going to get where Jesus wants us to really go. As I said, he's wandering through the countryside. He doesn't want people to hear what he's saying. He wants to be away from all the people that are following him. He wants to deal with the 12. He gives them the information. They gaff it off. And then when they think by themselves, what is the first thing they do? They start to get into a discussion on who is the greatest. And I think they did it because they did not grasp what Jesus was telling them on who he really is and why he's there. Because they still see the Messiah as the one that's going to let Israel out of bondage from Rome. We're going to be powerful. We're going to whoop all kinds of people. And we're going to be free. Jesus was also telling them that their fellowship together is not going to end with his death. He's going to rise 3 days later. The truth of who he is going to come out to those who will believe in what they hear and what they see afterwards. And yet the disciples couldn't get it through their heads. They could not understand the kingship that Jesus was talking about. They didn't understand. And because they didn't understand, they did not want to be seen as either ignorant or unknowing. And none of us wants to be that way. We really, and you put yourself in a situation, how many times have you listened to a conversation, had no idea what was going on, but your head was going up and down? We do it. I do it. I've done it. We're not fooling anybody, but hey. But there is another possibility I want you to think about. And that's the fact that they weren't supposed to get it. That God was clouding their minds to the obvious because they had not reached the maturity that they needed to be at to understand truly the ramifications of what was going to happen to them when Jesus died. And because they didn't understand, they were afraid to ask the question. Because maybe they did not want to know the answer to that question. And if that may seem far-fetched, ladies, you're going to love this one. It's just like the guy that's not going to go to the hospital when he's not feeling well because I don't know what the doctor's going to say. And it's easier to sit here and say, I'll deal with it when the time comes. The time comes. It's a case of I'm listening to what you are saying. I'm not hearing what you're saying. And in context, we do that a lot in our day-to-day lives. We sit down and read the Bible over and over and over and over again, and we get to reading it in the context where we're comfortable in, and then one day you read exactly the same thing you've been reading for 20 years, and the light comes on, and you go, cracky, that's what it really means. And I will be honest, I've had that happen when I'm in the pulpit. I'm sitting there going through a sermon, and the back of the mind goes, oh, by the way, this is what I really want you to say, and oh, dear. How could I have been so wrong? But that's the way God works in our lives. He spoon feeds us what we need to know when we need to know it. That's why you can have people that have been in church for 30, 40, 50 years and still have a bare minimum knowledge of who Christ is. Or you can have somebody that has only been in the church for a few years, but they get it. And it's not because they're any smarter. It's because God says, hey, I got something for you to do. And here's the information you're going to need. But don't get comfortable because there's more and more to learn. But if we go back to the scriptures right now, we have an interesting thing because I fully believe that Jesus knew exactly what they were talking about. He asked the simple question, just like he did in chapter 8. And they didn't give him an answer. And it brings up a teachable moment to them. In verse 35, we hear him say, sitting down, he called the 12 to them and said to them, if anybody wants to be first, he shall be the last of all and servant of all. Now, when we read this, there are two stages of the instruction of what he's about to do here. He asked the 12 what they were talking about him. They didn't bother answering him as if, well, I'm not sure I want to tell you. Now, they were arguing among each other who was the best and the brightest of the disciples, of the 12. And if you're going to have that conversation, no matter where you're in life, the last thing you might not want to do is tell the boss what you were talking about. Because you might not like the feedback. And it's also interesting to note that while they're having this argument, the argument really comes down to, am I number 2? Am I number 3? Am I number 4? Am I number 5? Am I number 12? And I think that goes to Judas Iscariot, but that's my own idea, and that's for obvious reasons. But what comes next is really interesting because it's a signal to what is going on. Jesus sits down. And when Jesus sits down and then he calls the 12 to him, lesson time. We're going to sit around and talk to one another, not about how nice the weather is. I'm going to give you information that is important. You need to sit down and listen to this. He sat, he called, he gave them the statement, and he wants them to hear and think about that. If anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. And I think he's trying to get them to come to the conclusion is that to measure true greatness is only done through servanthood of all. Different from everything we hear today about greatness. But it's basically saying, don't take yourself too seriously. You need to be humble. You need to have a humility before others. And he shows that in verse 37 when he takes that child in his arms and he says, whoever receives one child like this in my name receives me. And whoever receives me does not receive me, but him who sent me. We comment on this one, and I've actually used this line of basically he is saying, I want you people to be as open and trusting and innocent as this child is. The child who, if you tell and explain them something, they will take it in because they trust you. Like little sponges taking in everything that you say to them. Now, that particular line of thought is very common, and it's preached that way. There are scriptural readings that you can take very easily. Mark 10:15. Truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child will not enter it at all. You have to be open to what God is telling you, and sometimes you got to do it just because. Why? Because I told you so. And we follow up with Matthew 18:3-5. Truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever received one such child in my name receives me. But I'll be honest, that last set of verses kind of changes everything because of that one word, convert. And a convert is someone that is new to something. It's that person who is hearing about Jesus for the first time and says, yes, that's an absolutely wonderful thing. And I think we have trouble coming to that because of the word child, because we see child as one of our younger people. But how many times in the Bible are we told we are the children of God? And that means we need to listen. We need to take our time and understand what God is trying to tell us. When we receive one another, when we receive that new person into our midst, new to Christianity, we need to bring ourselves down to that level when we're dealing with them. Because if I have to deal with somebody that's been in church forever, or somebody I know, another pastor, deacons, some of the folks in this congregation, I'm going to talk to them in a different way, on a different level, than I do somebody that's only been in the church 5 minutes. Because, number one, I expect the other person to know stuff better. But I also don't expect the new person to understand. Because you don't know what you don't know. So, yes, it's both ways. We need to take the children in, the little ones, and love them and treat them and protect them and teach them and care for them. We need to bring the new Christian in and do exactly the same thing. We need to serve them spiritually. Because that's what we're all called to do. And if you are a leader in the church, you need to be willing to do whatever it is to serve those in need. But we come right back to that one word, service, servanthood, to serve others. See, you constantly hear about serving the church. There are requests to help with various positions around the church so that we can grow, we can sponsor, we can provide a worship service, a place to be that is nourishing and uplifting. But I sometimes think we get, as congregations, kind of lost in what I'm saying here. What is service? Now, I am going to take a bit of pastor's privilege here, because what I'm going to do now is talk about Charity Baptist Church. And I'm going to talk about servanthood. This is not meant to upset anybody. It's really not. Because I'm very, very proud of this church. But I also don't think the church sees itself who it really is. I don't think they see, in the midst of what's going on around them, God in action. And I think we're being forced to look at Charity Baptist Church at this time, in this place, for a specific reason. Now, we are wrapped up in finding a new pastor, what we're supposed to do. But at the same time, we need to look at ourselves, where we want to go, what we want to be, how we're going to get there. And I'm afraid at times we sit back, because I've heard it says, well, we may want to wait until the new pastor comes in. No. The new pastor, God love him, whoever he's going to be, is coming into the church new. He does not know you. If we wait until he actually walks through the door, and that's 6 months from now, this will be an empty building. Not because you are all not all loving, you're not all Christians, you're not all wonderful people. It's because you forgot. This is a church of people. You make the rules. The pastor, you do not work for the pastor. That pastor works for you. That's a little blunt. And I don't want it to sound caustic, because like I said, the way I see things, we're on the right track. We've lost people. We've lost other people because they wanted to go to a different church, and in one specific place, they were more comfortable with being an elder leadership. Had nothing against our church. We had people that followed other people because they're following a person. We have people that will be leaving us because, you know what? We're getting old. It's time for us to go live with family. Don't want to see them go, but no matter who's pastor here, it was going to happen. We forget what we have here. We have something incredibly special thanks to each and every one of you. I I have been in ministry for 18 years now, which shocked me when I went and figured it out. I'm going to start dealing with people. Don't feel uncomfortable, because this is a testament to the glory of the people that are serving God. And I'm going to start with the deacons. Our deacons here are some of the best deacons I have ever worked with. They love God without question. They will do the hard work it takes to keep this church running. They've lost sleep over finances, over worship, over attendance, over buildings and grounds, education. There have been tears. There's been worry. But they are here every single day. And I love them dearly, because I can point to a deacon and say, without a doubt, they will do the best thing because they follow God. We have wonderful teachers that take on the care and responsibility of our children, of our teenagers, of our adults. This morning's adult Bible study was absolutely awesome. It hit exactly. And if you weren't here for it, you missed it, and you need to be here. Just like you need to be here on Saturday nights. We are, Saturday night, Sunday night. Thank you, Shelley. The other day. Because I usually, when I need to do something, I go to Shelley and she goes, okay. And it gets done. But no, Sunday nights. I know how hard they work. I know the number of hours that Fred puts in and is putting in. I know what led these men and these women to spend hours getting ready for Sunday school to teach the kids. I know the amount of research that goes in for what Todd is doing in the morning. That's going to be the information we need. We are identifying, we're going back to the basics. We are going to find out and be able to identify us as the Baptist God wants us to be. The biblical training and the understanding of where God wants us to go. Pam, Lisa, Fred, Jason, Janet, Todd are doing God's work in service. We are blessed with a great music ministry. Janet, God bless you. And she's not here. She's in there. Pat her on the back. She just does such a wonderful job, because we don't talk about the hymns, because I've had to play that game, and it's hard picking a hymn for a sermon. But I notice that when I, no matter what I've sent, our hymns are spot on. And even the times I didn't send her, there's God. We're blessed with Mickey, who comes in and plays for us. We're blessed with Rachel and Shelley and Joel. We are blessed with the people on the choir that we're going to start up again. We are going to be blessed by the young people singing to us again. Because we have people that care. I sure hope you don't take this the wrong way. Our biggest concern is not the pastor. It's not. Our biggest concern is each one of you. Because what I have been able to see in 2012, 2013, I got the word from the Lord that I was moving. Think about how long ago that was. Didn't know why. He gave me another 3 years at the congregation I was at because we had things that we needed to do. He brought me out here and I was able to come to the church. Now, Charity Baptist Church was fourth on my list in the visits we came and in the time that I was here before Pam moved out here. And I went to a bunch of other churches. First three times it was, you need to go to Charity. And so I said, okay, I went to Charity. And I thought it was absolutely hilarious because I walked in as a Southern Baptist, and because I worry about music. And I looked at your hymnal, and it wasn't the same one I was used to. And Janet was playing, and she played every song I know I'd love. The opening was absolutely wonderful. I didn't know any of the hymns during the service. And I'm going, okay. But the sermon spoke to me. Visited another place. Okay. Brought Pam back here, and we talked about it, and we went down to the bottom of the hill and figured out drums and guitars are not my thing. Came back to Charity. And Charity Baptist Church fit because of the people. Now, I will be perfectly honest. We'll talk about numbers, but I want to tell you this. I was looking for a church between 50 and 100. Because I think that 2,000-person church doesn't do the job. Nice to have all those numbers, but I get more out of being able to know who you are and talk to you. And I love the fact that I could sit back there in the corner, monitor people coming in the door, get good spiritual pastoring, good Sunday school, and I was just happier than a tick on a dog. But you see, I didn't understand why I was brought to this church. Because in 2012, 2013, God knew that an ungodly person was going to chase the pastor out of here. And in the interim of getting a new one, I would be allowed to use the expertise, having been through this process twice, that I would get to preach in front of people I know and respect and love deeply. That's God in action. That's over 8 years ago that He knew we would be here. It is no mistake that Fred was brought here, that Robert was brought here, that Todd was brought here, Jason has been here. The people sitting in this room are here because God put you here because He has a plan and He has things for each and every one of you doing, from the twins all the way up to Miss Elizabeth. God loves this church. So on the days you get down because people are missing, God's getting rid of the people that He doesn't need here. Bad choice of words. He may be sending them someplace else because they have something to do elsewhere. The people that are still here are here for a reason, even if it's only to come on Sundays. Now that goes against what I really want to preach about. Because you know what? It's been a rough couple of years. We've lost a pastor. We've had to deal with this COVID thing. We have been dealing with governments that are trying to shut our churches down. And make no mistake about it, brothers and sisters, the government is actively trying to shut us down little by little. Why can't you come to church? Well, we don't want you to spread. No. Because if people don't come to church, they don't have others to rely on, and they're segregated. Because I don't care what you said, it was said great this morning. You don't get anything out of sitting at home on a Sunday morning watching some evangelist on television, because that ain't the church. This is the church. It's sitting around talking to one another. It's sharing really, really sugary cake that we're going to get after the worship service today. It's celebrating birthdays. It's celebrating love. It's going out and visiting people that are in the hospital when you can get in the hospital. Visiting people that need your help at home. It's praying for them. That is the church. That is us. God bless each and every one of you for what you do, for where you are. The biggest problem that was identified to us is we need something to bring kids in. Now I'm going to back that up a bit because if you all remembered, I asked the ladies if we could have a meeting and we could talk about. And one of many things that came up are we need stuff for kids. So we'd fallen away from it. We need fellowshipping. We need to reinstitute Adventure Kids and VBS and other stuff. But brothers and sisters, look what's happened over the last couple of months. Bless Shelley. We have Adventure Kids on Sunday nights. We are going to have Vacation Bible School next year. Bank on it. Somebody walked in with 17 kids today. We've got a special time in our worship services. We have our young people actively taking part in our worship services. Rachel, Josiah, Joel, you're not so young, but at my age, you're still a kid. This is where we're supposed to be. We're going to have Miss Lily reading in 2 weeks. That's awesome. That's showing our young people exactly where you fit into this whole people. But it came out because we asked a question, we identified a problem, and we took care of it. We are going to be having monthly young people's events. Like I said, Zoo in October. Don't know what I'm doing for the teenagers yet, but I've got a couple of ideas. Bringing them together, getting their friends together to sit and to talk, have fun. Our ladies have set up a whole slate of events between now and the beginning of the year, and I am really, 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 really excited about the fact that they're talking about a women's Bible study where women can get together and talk about the things that they see it, how they view the Bible. Awesome. Effective. Needed. We had a fellowship dinner for Labor Day. Okay, it was really quickly set up, and I ate really well, thank you. But it was done, and it may have been Labor Day, but we are going to be having more of those. We'll be reading the letters from the missionary here in church. We're going to fellowship. Because we are God's people and we love one another, and there's nothing as precious to us as one another. That is where God is going. Now, I will be perfectly honest. I have no idea how long I'm going to be in the pulpit. Not too long, I hope, because we got a couple of really good candidates, and I'm stepping on Fred's toes here, but I think we have a couple of people that are distinct possibilities. And good Lord willing, if we are here, if I'm still here in December, we are going to have a Christmas Eve worship service. It could be a little bit of Bible reading, a whole lot of Christmas carol singing, and we'll come together. And we will have fun. You've noticed the changes up here, the runner up here. The Bible, this is a church. The The Bible is where we should center, why it's on the table. The runner. This signifies what part of the church year. Can anybody tell me what part of the church year this is? Paul doesn't count because I told him this morning. We're in Pentecost. That will change when we come to Advent, when I flip that baby over and it's purple. It's the celebration of the church year. Yes, Thanksgiving there, and we have all these wonderful, wonderful, and yes, thank God for everything he gives us. There have been changes in the bulletin. Little ones at a time, but when you open up, the first thing you see, because it jumps out at you, is not the ads, not the what's going on. It's the worship service. What songs are being sung? Who's doing what? What verses are we going to hear? Because that's what that bulletin is supposed to be out. Worship of God. What am I forgetting? Forgetting something. But it'll pop in. You get the general idea. But we will not succeed without each and every one of you, without your help. We've got the people around here because I ask, we need your help. Will you please? And they said, sure. I forgot Baptist churches, you don't volunteer for a darn thing, but hey, I'd be happy if you asked me to. There's going to be a lot more asking. Last week, I asked you to raise your hands if you did certain things to show your love and service of God. Remember, I said this is not to embarrass anybody. But there's a theory in church that 10 to 15% of the people do the majority of the work in the churches. I don't think that's true here. I think we far exceed that. I'm going to go over a list, and I'm going to name names of the people that work themselves to death here. Bad choice of words. That serve God in a wonderful manner, no matter how long it takes or how often they need to be here. This is not to embarrass anybody, but you need to see that this church has God's blessing. So as I call your name, stand up and remain standing because we have people doing several things until I'm done. Deacons, Todd. See, I'm going to do this because I get to stand up here for an hour sharing the wealth. Robert, Fred, Paul, you do not have to stand up. But we understand. You can if you want. Our music, Janet, who isn't here, be sure to stop and thank Janet. Mickey, Shelley, Joel, our youngsters. We've lost a couple of them. Oh, look, there's a head. Rachel. Our teachers, Todd, Fred, Jason, Pam, Janet, and because they help out, Rachel and Josiah. And yes, I know you've helped out with your mom and everything, with Adventure Kids and everything. Lisa, beep, 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 beep. She was afraid I was going to forget you. You're actually on my list, really. You're right here. I'm sorry? Yep. You see, I don't know everything that goes on, so this is as much for me as it is for you. Our pastor, our pastoral search committee, Todd, Fred, Jason, Paul, Robert, Lisa, Janet. Our nursery, Todd, Shelley, Joel, Jason, Jennifer, Lisa. Yes, Jocelyn, you and Anastasia gets that. Anastasia hates it when I point things out to her. May not seem a lot, but this bulletin isn't put together by me because I don't have that kind of expertise, and Pam has been helping with that. And everybody that has been pitching in on the office work, our treasurers, Paul and Robert, done yeoman's work. And I'm going to get a, we had a fairly good mid-year on the finances, and we were, you know, it came out, we're not going under, we got the money. And through their hard work, we've also discovered we're doing twice as well as we thought we were. Because God loves our church. Buildings and grounds. Todd, Joel, all the kids get to stand up because that's a weed-picking crew over there. Oh, and that's pretty much the rest of you should be standing up for that also. The people that have visited others at their houses weren't, they weren't able to be here. DeLore, Dorothy. Come on. You get to stand up too. Yeah, you. Janice. How many of you visited Elizabeth in rehab or raise your hand? Yes, you get to stand up too. Now, I have forgotten dozens of dozens of dozens of things that go on in this church. Like, I know this was put up on a Thursday night, and all this was set up for us by people that care and love us. But take a look around you. And I can look at everybody that's still sitting right now and come up with a time that they've helped the church. Whether it's bringing food, whether it's suggestions about how maybe we can help some other people that aren't here and can't make it. This ain't 15%, folks. This is God in action as a church it should be. You people keep the faith. We don't have one thing to worry about because we are on the cusp of greatness in God's eyes. We may not hit 100 people. We may only hit 50, 60, 70. But by God, they will be Christians that serve and love. And you can all sit down because I imagine you're getting tired. But I did that and I went through this whole thing to understand. Have faith in God. He's got us. And I know He's got us because you've just sat through an hour of sermon. You guys are brave. So I am going to end with that. Thank you for all you do. May God bless you in everything in your lives. And Daniela, right? I haven't forgotten you either. Your presence here is special, as is your mom's. And we are thankful you are here, and we love you very much.